Welcome back to Researching Peace, the podcast brought to you by the Department of Peace and Conflict Research at Uppsala University. In three episodes, we're diving into a special theme that focuses on the connection between water, climate and conflict. Join us as we engage in conversations with three unique guests across three insightful episodes. Today, it's time to learn from someone who can enlighten us about how the impacts of climate change and natural hazards are connected to armed conflicts. She's an associate professor at our department and an associate senior researcher at PRIO. She's also the director of the Uppsala Rotary Peace Center. What's more, she was recently awarded the prestigious Oscar Prize. Nina von Oxkolb, a warm welcome to Researching Peace.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. How are you today? It's sunny in Uppsala.
It's a wonderful day. Yes, I'm very fine. Thank you.
Great. Before we get started with today's important subject, I think both I and our listeners would like to get to know you a little bit more. When and where did you begin your journey to explore these topics?
So I really started working on this when I was working with the Uppsala Conflict Data Program back in 2010 here at the department. At that time, we were just working on something that was very special that we almost take for granted now. Georeference conflict data that allows us to map with precision where conflict take place by mapping where people die in conflicts. I would say this is a milestone for conflict research in general. It's really key to understanding patterns in armed conflict more generally and has led to a lot of process in the field. But it's also really key for understanding the topic of today. So understanding where climate change and natural hazards affect armed conflict, since these are typically localized patterns. So seeing all these immense new opportunities, I decided to write my PhD dissertation related to this topic.
And what led you to choose Uppsala University?
Initially, I would say this was very natural because my PhD dissertation work was so much tied to the use of conflict data that were produced here. Mm-hmm. But this is also quite a unique environment. You know, you're part of this as well. So with 90 people working on peace and conflict issues full time, this gives so much opportunities for collaborations, for interesting discussions among colleagues, with students. So while I have enjoyed to spend time in other research environments too, I really do think Uppsala is very special in that regard, and I'm happy to be back.
Could you please explain in quite simple terms for someone like me, unfamiliar with this subject, how climate change and conflict actually are interconnected?
Sure. Climate change has immense implications for many sectors in societies. And at this point, we have actually already seen an increase of over 1 degree Celsius since pre-industrial times. So climate change is not a matter of the future. It's already here. And this has implications for example, the availability of water, food production. It will lead to more sea level rise in the future. And also, it's already leading to more and more severe natural hazards, such as droughts and floods. For example, right now, we have in the Horn of Africa a multi-year drought. And research is showing that this drought wouldn't be here if it was not for climate change. So we already see these impacts. And this has implications for people on the ground. These challenges to people's livelihood can increase grievances against the state, and it can also make it more attractive to join, for example, a rebel group that gives alternative livelihoods and meaning. As resources become scarce on average, what is left, for example, the secure water points, agriculture areas become more valuable. It's important to see, though, that when we research these connections more systematically, for example, droughts or floods. In most cases, people just adapt in other ways. So if you think back to the severe droughts we had in Sweden just a couple of years ago, yes, people can still manage, right? If you think then about areas where a lot of people rely on agriculture for their livelihoods and then face these droughts, and if you think about areas where population groups are discriminated by the government, and most importantly, perhaps, where there's already fragility or ongoing conflict, then we do see increased conflict risk when we look into global or regional statistics.
What role does resource scarcity play in linking climate change and conflicts?
So as I mentioned before, climate change leads to, for example, water scarcity. It affects agriculture production. So these resources become more valuable, and the pressures on people depending on them are getting higher. But I think in that it is important to have in mind that studies showing that It's not kind of the scarcities that lead to conflict, but it is kind of how people handle them. So the scarcities as such, in most cases, are like the droughts in Sweden, are dealt mm-hmm. with peacefully. But where other risk factors are in place, they can aggravate the situation, or they sometimes lead to clashes. If we think, for example, in places where we have, like northern Kenya, where we have people relying on agriculture, people relying on pastoralism, on moving with the animals, they're sometimes engaged in clashes over water points or over land as well as cattle.
Can you give any more specific example where climate change had contributed to conflicts?
I've myself conducted studies in eastern DRC, in northern Uganda, in the Karamoja area, both areas where we have the history of conflict. And there are other examples like India, Philippines and Syria. There is a history of conflict or of fragility that makes them more susceptible to having climate in addition feed the conflict. So I think that is something that we see on the ground in these specific cases, that the broader patterns, when we look into statistics and we look into regions, global patterns are also in different ways reflected on when we look more deeply, but usually in more complex ways, so to say. So, for example, rebel groups engaged in civilian killings in areas where we have agriculture production, or that people in flood-exposed areas and that are hit by flood are more likely to support the use of violence.
Do you think existing forecasts can accurately capture these connections? And what does it mean for taking early actions to prevent climate-related conflicts?
Here, it's important to have in mind that although we have seen climate change already these days, so we have, as I mentioned, one degree of warming compared to pre-industrial times, a lot of the changes that we will see are future changes. So forecasting models like the VUES project that we have here at the department usually capture short-term periods, so just a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I think where there is a lot of research gaps is to consider scenarios for the future, so how both societal development will proceed in the future, but also how the climate will change in the future and how these things interact. And that's, of course, a very difficult question to research, but I think it's necessary to really capture what may happen in the future, since there's not so much, there is climate change, but immense changes will probably await us.
If we look ahead, what can research do to help this situation?
The most important thing, perhaps, is that not the early warning, but it is for societies to bring down emissions. So, and prevent extreme climate change at this point. And this is really something that is quite urgent. So, and we are also seeing that this is not going quite in the right direction. So after the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year, the subsidies, consumption subsidies to fossil fuels that are driving climate change have more than doubled compared to the year before, to $1,100 billion, according to the International Energy Association.
It's hard to grasp.
Yeah, so I think this is really a change that is hopefully only short term, but it's also, if we think from a societal level and what questions are pressing right now, I think it's an area where we need to do more research how to get to a transition that lowers emission, that mitigates climate change. And for example, together with colleagues, I'm right now working on climate change mitigation measures such as cutting subsidies to fossil fuel use. And I hope this work can inform the crucial processes that societies now need to go through in the transition to low emission energy forms. So I think that's one area where research is really important right now. But when we then think about what we talked about earlier, right, the impact of climate change, this is also still very important, because even if we bend the emission curve, if we mitigate climate change, we will see more of this coming. So this is unavoidable that temperatures will rise further. So here, research can help in several respects, I think. So it helps us understanding how strong these connections are. And as I mentioned before, the link between climate change, climate-related hazards, and conflict is complex. So we need to understand under what conditions and where exactly they are taking place in order to engage in prevention. And also another field where I think it's important to have more research, and where research can contribute, is the area of cooperation. So how can cooperation in response to such hazards be promoted? So here we for example, look right now into flood-exposed populations in Bangladesh in a cooperation with researcher Professor Bali Kubi and at ETH Zurich, and following them during the flood period, and also study how people cope and how they collaborate following hazards and when they have been displaced by floods. What is also important to mention here, which I think is quite promising, is to directly engage with organizations on the ground who work with the most affected population. So organizations such as the World Food Programme or the FAO, the UN Food and Agriculture Organizations, mm-hmm. are working with these agricultural populations and conflict-affected area. Working with them, we've done this in the studies I mentioned, DRC and in Uganda, I think can help to inform the work of what to do actually about this thing.
And if we look ahead, let's say, the next 10 years, which specific locations around the world would you anticipate will be significantly impacted by climate-related pressures?
An important factor that we have found our researchers pointing to is that we find climate usually affecting ongoing conflict or areas with the history of violence. Mm. So for these reasons, I would assume that unfortunately in the next 5 to 10 years, it will still be areas that already are in conflict that are more likely to have conflict due to climate change. So these are, for example, the Horn of Africa, areas in South Asia. And this is really because conflict also undermines the coping capacity. So if you think about an ongoing conflict, people have other economic opportunities that prevents the development of an economy that is less reliant on agriculture, and it generally kind of undermines coping capacities. So this is an important thing to also have in mind when considering these linkages, that potentially we may see the conflicts becoming even more sticky, getting longer, and this vicious circle where conflict drives the vulnerability to climate change, and climate change then further fuels the conflict.
Are you hopeful in any way?
If we think about climate change as such, it's not too late, right? So we have seen severe climate change up to this point, but how we manage future climate change really depends on the steps that are taken now to bring down emissions. And there's a lot of technology and a lot of changes that we see that are in the right direction in terms of the use of renewable energy, for example. So I think there's always hope as long as we have a choice, right? I do think this is not a field where we can say with certainty what will happen, but what I can say is that there is still time to do something about it, both to mitigate the impact of climate change, but more importantly also to bring down the emissions.
Nina von Oxkull, thank you so much. This has been very, very interesting, and I feel that I have learned a lot. Thank you so much for joining Researching Peace.
Thank you.